Ben Ennis is here.
Hi.
And he was here with me. Not here. He was there.
Where was I?
You were there at the ballpark with me yesterday.
I'm here now.
Here now.
Was there.
Was there. Yes.
With you.
Yep.
We were there.
Correct. We were there.
Very close to the action. Or whatever it was that I tweeted at.
That was good that you did that tweet.
Yeah.
Hey.
From the heart.
Well, I'll tell you this. We went down to the home opener yesterday. I was nervous going to that game because I knew how people were feeling about this team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was pretty clear that fan frustration was starting to boil over.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, weren't hitting and they were losing games.
Mm-hmm.
They came out. I was torn on whether those were boos, by the way, to start for John Schneider.
Yeah, it seems pretty clear that they were, in talking to people who were more attuned to the broadcast. Or
I'll just tell you, being there, I wasn't
mixed. It felt like mixed.
Yeah, I didn't.
Definitely boos when he came out to remove Jose Barrios.
Yeah, definitely that.
After like 200 pitches,
definitely that.
Over 100, but yeah.
But dude, there is something just so special about walking the concourse that first game, and all you're seeing is people wearing their Blue Jays stuff,
mm-hmm.
seeing the people in the Mariners gear, booing them as I do as I pass.
Even stopping though I grew you up for pictures. Mariners. Yeah, you got.
That was nice.
Talking to your adoring fans a lot yesterday.
But that's because.
You have adoring fans?
Well, it's because I'm good at my job.
Oh, you know, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's the measuring stick.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
That's how it works.
Interesting.
Yeah. If you're good at it, then sometimes people go, oh, who is that guy? And they Google you and they see what you look like.
No, I think.
I
was going to say that you are a very approachable person. You give off the air of being approachable.
You are not. You're not.
No.
But I also
think people
are
like I'm, yeah, they look at me, there's like an air of greatness and like respectability. I don't want to disturb the delicate genius.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't
you look
dare
so respectable.
Try and engage
you
in a conversation.
So respectable. We got a goodie bag. You look so respectable with your massive VIP lanyard that you wouldn't take off.
Yeah.
That they gave us for our section.
Somebody's going to tell me I'm a VIP. Yeah. I'm not going to deny that I'm a VIP.
I refused immediately mm-hmm. to wear the lanyard. I did take a picture in it.
Because it was like the size of your whole body.
It was. I got a little body.
Little pea head.
I got a little tiny body. I was like, oh, this is actually weighing me down. Yeah. I was like pulling. I was like, I can't afford to shrink. And this might condense my spine. This lanyard. I can't afford. No, it was a great day, man. I just that concourse walk, that first one, getting into the building and just feeling that energy, that atmosphere. It was a long pregame. I was not aware that there was something called the Team Gold Glove.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I've watched
that
baseball
either.
My whole life.
No, team. Do they all get one? Do they have to share one? Is that a huge one?
It would be
sweet if it was like a chair. My children used to have a glove chair. It'd be cool if they had like a gold glove chair that they get to sit in. In the clubhouse?
It doesn't sound that cool when you're saying it out loud.
I think it'd be really cool.
I think maybe in your mind.
It was like a beanbag chair made out of glove.
Maybe in your mind it was cool.
Yeah.
Here's what I will say to start. It's incredible how much nicer the ballpark is.
Yeah.
It's outrageous. That place, okay, it was a dump.
Yep.
All right. Now that it's fixed,
we can say it. It's like Exhibition Stadium was a dump. But
it
that
was a
like,
dump. It was
that
a
was
dump.
Like that. That was like just a step up from dump. It was like it was dump adjacent.
Yeah,
it was like the Exhibition Stadium was the dump.
Yeah.
And old Rogers Center was like the recycling center.
No,
it's not food waste, but it's
no, they
like,
were both dumps. They were both just rival dumps. They were vying for your business. They kept flashing this graphic up or a video about how much debris was removed from the Rogers Center. And I went, that's a cool stat. I'll never remember. Mm-hmm. Imagine retaining that today.
Mm-hmm.
Like being at work and you're like, how many?
I shouldn't quiz you on it then.
Don't quiz me. But it's good because everything they removed went to the dump. And the people at the dump were like, wait, this was from a different dump?
Yeah.
They went, no, this was from the Rogers Center. They're like, oh, wow, okay.
Makes sense.
It's unbelievable. We're sitting there. We're in Rogers Landing, which was a really cool area. Like, I, you know, never got to stand there before because it was I think it's for corporate events. I'm not fully sure. You can walk down there.
Most games it is open for everybody, but we were with the classy folks. We were VIPs. Some of us wore our lanyards.
But we're standing right beside Luis Castillo as he's warming up.
Sick. I can hit him. Watching... I knew he was hittable. I was like, no problem.
Yeah. We're watching him throw. Yeah. And I'm standing there just looking at it going, we're right at right field in a group section, mm-hmm. which is all everybody ever wanted. Mm-hmm. And then we walked around. We met a bunch of my different friends. We met up with Ailish Forfar, you know, and we're going to different social areas, which was never a thing at the ballpark before. Mm-hmm. It was basically just that little Budweiser lounge that's behind the home plate area. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of it. You'd meet in the concourse and it felt like somebody turned the lights off. Mm-hmm. And now it's well lit. There's so much to do. There's so much. I couldn't get over it, soaking it in, looking at how beautiful the 100 section looked. And
you can debate the team and you can be disappointed with the lack of offseason moves and you can question the direction and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, you can't question the ballpark.
It's unquestionably unbelievable.
Yeah, it's so crazy that they turned it from that dump into what it is. You know what it is? It's Pimp My Ride. Except for good. Remember that show?
Yeah.
Remember Pimp My Ride? But it was always like a Honda Civic, and they were like, we put some 22s on it.
Some neon lights. Yeah, it's like, it's not good.
But this is actually, they took the Civic, and they actually did.
It's not a Civic, though, to begin with. It's like, it's got the body of like a Bentley or something. That's but it what was I'm like, saying. It was beaten. It was rusted out, and they restored it. Or turned it into a Bentley. We didn't know there was a Bentley under there.
That is crazy, though. That's true. Actually, no, that's it. That's it. You know what? No, it's a different reality show.
Okay,
Is it
cake? There was cake.
No.
Oh, Love is Blind.
I've never seen cake.
Is it cake?
Is it cake?
My kids love Is It Cake.
Yeah, I bet. No, Storage Wars. It was taking me a second. But it turned out to all be a lie, duh. But they would do that thing where it would be, this locker looks like it's just garbage. And then they uncovered inside that it was actually worth $1 million. Right. And that's it. I love that show because it was always, and that dresser, that's about $180, something like that, broken wood dresser. They're just the little counter that kept going up. No, I could not be more impressed by the ballpark, by the presentation, by all of it. The only thing that I thought was funny is you told me they didn't put in real foul poles because of Taylor Swift.
Yes.
And I went, wow, that is the power of Taylor Swift. She's coming here one time.
I think it's a couple of shows.
Yeah, she's doing a couple shows here, but I'm just saying November. That she's coming here.
But yeah,
one time.
It's like mostly Taylor Swift who like did consult the Blue Jays on the renovations.
Unbelievable.
To Rogers Center. But it's also like concerts in general what Marnie Starkman told me, one of the VP of operations there for the Blue Jays, told me that, this is a baseball specific stadium. And if we're having a baseball specific, if it's just a ballpark, don't we want normal foul poles? And that makes sense. That would make it feel more like a ballpark. And they researched it, and they would have had to dig super deep down into the ground because of the wind. It would knock them over if they weren't fully in the foundation of Rogers. They were going to do it. And then Taylor Swift was like, how do our trucks get in if you've got foul poles there?
And then
like,
they went, never mind.
Forget it.
Yeah, forget it. Forget
it,
Taylor.
You know what was good? You know what was good? The previous foul poles. They were fine.
Yeah.
So they did that.
Could you imagine she did a tweet? So sad. Like, little cry face. We'll not be able to play in Toronto because of the Blue Jays decided to have real foul poles, I guess.
Yeah.
What are those? Yeah. Ooh, wouldn't have been a good day. Wouldn't have been a good day for the Jays. So they just had to bend the knee.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift is the queen of Earth.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. But because isn't something that she couldn't tell someone, hey.
Buddy, what if... I mean, I wonder how far they would go. It's like, hey, you know what? Actually, there's too many seats here. Can you, like, take out a bunch of seats?
Yeah. I'm like, of course.
Right away.
Right away.
Oh, 500 level. I don't like that.
Yeah.
Can you just chop that off?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Throw the roof out.
Yeah.
Yuck.
Ew.
Yeah, don't want it. Anyways, it was a great night down the park. The team hit. That was...
I mean, they scored 5 runs.
Yeah, that's nice. Are you kidding? 5 runs is luxury.
Yeah, the Dodgers, like, just did that. Like, they're not playing right now, but they just scored 5 runs.
Okay, so where I want to start with this, though... Yeah. Okay. Other teams score 5 runs.
I know. It's hilarious. I agree with you.
5 runs
felt like they hit.
So many runs.
They hit no home runs, and they scored 5 runs.
And they actually did have a couple opportunities to really, like, do a lot of damage and put the game away. And
well, I mean, they came up with the hit with the bases loaded, though. Yeah. David Schneider did the thing.
Yeah, David Schneider did the thing. Your boy did the thing. I got to say, though, I want to start with this. I feel like we haven't talked a lot about Justin Turner signing and how good it's been so far.
Uh-huh. He looks like...
good.
Yeah. It's not just the production.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, watch the games, nerd.
Mm-hmm.
And we watch the games. That's part of the David Schneider thing with me, too. It's like, it's not just the results. It's like watching the process.
I'm really trying to make this about Justin Turner, and you couldn't help but just turn it immediately into David Schneider. I'm like, hey, how about Justin Turner signing? It's like, yeah. Well, you're like, I mean, hey, and then you know who else is David Schneider.
Well, you know, there is there's a clear correlation here, too, because he was hitting directly behind Justin Turner. Justin Turner's been so good, but it's like, oh, who's hitting behind him? Oh, yeah, it's Kevin Biggio, who takes strike three with the bases loaded at Yankee Stadium. You're like, oof.
Yeah.
Line of construction's not a thing, like, as far as the previous guy producing, but it is a thing as far as the way opposing pitchers approach that guy. But, yeah, no, Justin Turner looks like a professional hitter.
That's
it. Yes, I understand it's early, and he's aged, and by the end of last season with Boston, too, he wasn't producing at the rate he was producing.
His second half of the season was like a 7-something OPS, 720, I want to say.
Yeah, so you probably have to protect his body at some point this season, maybe when you've built up enough standings equity, that, or maybe Joey Votto arrives when he's, you know, done hitting off a tee that you can rest him a little bit. But, yeah, no, Justin Turner looks like the real deal.
Here's the other thing. Do you know that after that game, because Isaiah Kiner-Falefa had two hits.
And then one play not made on the best throw we're going to see from an outfielder all season long.
Yeah, that was, and we had a perfect view for that. That was horrific. That was nightmarish. It was actually kind of funny watching him react to the Jumbotron where he was clearly so embarrassed. He was like, oh, no, he did it right away that he didn't do it.
Yeah.
They showed his face and he was immediately
It was
just
a weird play because like he had it in the right position. Then he brought his glove up because he was trying to throw. He was trying to turn two with the play at second base.
Yeah, I thought that he was trying to brace himself for potential contact.
No, but he was throwing
but okay, you're probably right. Because I was mad in the moment. Yes. A couple of Bud Light deeps, you know, where I was like, I'm not going to
be mad.
Yeah, I was mad, and I was like, what are you doing? You know, I had one of those, was like a little yelling thing to make the tag.
Was it out loud? You did
Yeah, I was a little upset about that one. I was like, first of all, I had that under.
Yes.
And so that was a pretty critical miss at the time, if you recall.
We did well, though.
Oh, I did very well. Thank you very much. I did
Did I, because I tailed you.
Yeah, that's correct. And if you did, you could have as well. You could have followed at JD Bunkus on Twitter and Instagram. I gave out a bunch of winning picks. But yeah, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, after those two hits, he now has a 630 OPS.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just fun early season stuff. But yeah, Bo Bichette, 614. And George Springer, 657. Varsho, 402. Kirk, 413. Kiermaier, 301. This is to illustrate that actually Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who I think most Blue Jays fans already hate, is actually hitting to start the season better than everybody on the team, essentially, other than Biggio, Schneider, Turner, and Vladdy.
Yeah, no, you may have noticed they've been very bad offensively.
No, but that's funny, man. That's just funny.
Yeah, and what's his career OPS? Because that's probably close in line. Yeah, like he's like, oh, the only guy also producing to his career averages is Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. No. Blue Jays also second last in Major League Baseball in exit velocity and hard hit rate and, you know, some other nerd stat indicators, which is, it's not ideal, but, can't get any worse than this. Like the bottom five in the order, going to be some questions about, but the top four guys, I don't think is as bad as you think George Springer might be this year. I don't think it's to the tune of like a sub 700 OPS.
No, I don't think that's
And
it.
Bo, I think we can all agree that Bo looks more like Bo.
No, I'm not. I was actually going to say, out of all those guys, who are you most concerned with to start the year? Because I think the answer is obvious.
What, you think it's Springer?
No.
Oh, you think it's Vlad?
No.
You think it's Bo?
No.
So
I listed
on.
All those names, the head of the name, all of the names.
Oh, you mean, I thought you were talking about the top four, because
No. You think it's Bo? No, I don't think it's Bo.
I mean, you text me about some outrageous stuff. And
yeah, I know. I do outrageous texts during baseball games. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I really like sports, and I pump horrible takes to people nonstop.
Bad.
Yeah.
I told you, I respond to the ones.
No, dude, if I had my text exposed, people would be like, people already think that I'm way too underqualified to do this job in the first place. People think that my sports acumen is way off. I read the comments section sometimes. I see the mean tweets. You know, I've seen some of the poor reviews on iTunes. I'm aware that I'm not perfect. I'm not beloved by everyone. I'm not universally loved. I'm not Taylor Swift, right? You know?
But if they saw your
text. But if they saw the text, then it would be over. Everyone would go, wait, we've ever listened to this guy? This is the way that he watches some of these things? I also think I have smart ones, too, but yeah, I get a little emotional sometimes.
So for, people's knowledge, I do see the text, and so that impacts my view on
your sports. You suck to text with, though. You suck to text with.
Yeah, because I, I'm not, like, locked into my phone for texting. Like, I'm trying to do multiple things. And also, I don't, like, your texts that are nonsensical and horrible, like, I just don't feel like responding to all of them.
Yeah, no, I don't like that. That makes me feel bad. I don't, that makes my heart hurt.
So what was the question you asked? Like,
out of all the guys that I listed that now have OPS is lower than
Isaiah? Did you mention Dalton Varsho?
Correct. That is the answer, correct.
Well, of course.
Okay,
he's not playing anymore. Like, okay, but this is the beginning of the end.
Dude, this is where I want to go with this, okay? Because yesterday was a positive, okay? It was. The Jays won a baseball game. Barrios looked great again. I still don't really understand why the crowd was booing Barrios coming out, other than I guess he was objecting a little bit.
No, it's because the last time they saw that happen, the game two of the Twin Series. Like, that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, I don't know. I just wouldn't. That was the ultimate Hannibal Buress meme of, why are they booing me? I'm right.
Yeah.
That's
fine. John Schneider is the avatar for the front office and everything people are mad
that's
at,
true.
Though.
Yeah, that's true. I did think that if the Yankees would have had another game where they shut out the Blue Jays, where they would have just embarrassed the bats.
Yeah.
I thought they should have actually had Atkins sit in the seats with the fans. Like, he just is a roving, he sits around. Actually, imagine.
Or done the Jose Mourinho thing where, he stands in the middle of the field and, has people yell insults at him.
Yeah. That would have been pretty good, too. But I think just having him roam around the ballpark would have been fair enough. Like, he's got to sit in the new renovated seats.
Mm.
Varsho, to me, was one of the biggest stories yesterday, where he doesn't play. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get the start in a home opener.
Against a righty,
home opener.
Yeah.
And during a baseball game where there's, tons of features about Dalton Varsho to start the game.
We didn't see any of those. We just saw them without sound, but he's, in a band, maybe?
No, I got the lowdown.
Oh, what is the deal?
He paid someone to do a custom walk-up song for him.
No!
Yeah. And then they were like, they did a whole feature on it, and then they didn't even play him in that game to hear said walk-up song. Yeah.
I don't think I can talk about what I want to talk about when it comes to that.
Yeah, well, they probably then don't. But I will say this. to me, that was actually outside of, hey, good. It's important that the Jays started on the right foot with the crowd.
Yes.
You couldn't, being at the home opener, those are more expensive tickets.
Yes.
People were absolutely primed to boo had they gotten shut down. They came up in some clutch spots. What'd you say? Need a hit early. They got hits early. Turner comes
from
up.
From David Schneider.
Yep. And Turner.
And Alejandro Kirk.
Yep. And Alejandro Kirk. Yes, absolutely they did. Your guys. Your guys came up big in this baseball game.
Yeah.
I like it. You want more credit for the team than anyone else. But yeah.
I do. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But Schneider, I'm more invested in than I ever was with Kirk.
It's because actually insufferable.
Because, the Kirk thing, people were like, yeah, that guy can't hurt. I know.
You stay on track for this Varsho thought?
Okay.
Without getting derailed by David Schneider for one.
Okay, what's your thing? Dalton Varsho?
I'm just saying that this seems like a real, that's a real thing. This guy was the face of one of the biggest trades that this organization has made. Like, what, the Barrios trade was bigger?
I mean, it was pretty big. That's an interesting question because the Barrios trade.
I think that the Barrios trade was bigger.
Yeah, because you're talking about, so in Austin Martin, a fifth overall pick, right? Simeon Woods Richardson, remember, was piggybacking Alec Manoa in spring training games.
Yeah.
He was viewed as a real asset, but the fifth overall pick, remember the Jays, it felt like they lucked into Austin Martin, that the Orioles didn't select Austin Martin, that they were able to get him, and he played in
Bowen Martin.
Yeah, and they knew each other in Florida, and he stinks. I think at the time the Barrios trade was big. It was also in season too, right? That was a deadline move.
Only thing is with this, it's a deadline move, whatever. The only difference in why I would argue that the Varsho one is slightly bigger is because it was a, this is how we're rounding out this offseason of maturity, and this is how we're going to compete for a World Series now.
Yeah.
Barrios was more of a, we're pushing for the playoffs and we feel like we're legit.
Mm-hmm.
That one was a finishing piece. They took their best prospect that the organization had and went, okay, we're all in. We've done it now. We've decided that this is our championship core. And Varsho, there was a lot of optimism coming into the season about him being a positive regression guy and him being someone that was going to be, you know, better at the plate. He was opening the season hitting in the five hole, so clearly the organization thought that there was going to be something. I've told you this a million times. I don't think that they make that trade without believing he was an 800 OPS guy.
Yeah.
And now I think that they're hoping and praying that he can be a 700 OPS guy. And I know there's some people that are out there that have tried to put together his, like, you know, swing mechanics, and they try to do, like, spins of, oh, this guy could actually be great, and if only this, it's like, he might just flat out stink at the dish. Like, we're seeing a lot of stinky behavior at the dish. The holes continue to look like the holes. And for them to have already bumped him down to what, 8 when he's hitting?
Yeah, 7. They like to split up the lefties. Right?
Sure, but so, the fact that he's already fallen down a few spots in the order, mm-hmm, and he got sat for the home opener against a right-handed pitcher is, you know, it's not a great sign for someone who admittedly struggled with confidence issues last season.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that as great a defender as he is at a position that must be said is not a premium defensive position, like, that is not the gap in defense, again, in left field between he and Davis Schneider, take whoever, like Kevin Biggio, whoever it is. And I think it's more with Davis Schneider, because I think the offense he can provide is much greater than what Kevin Biggio can provide. The difference in offense is not worth the difference in defense that you're getting. Again, in left field. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Davis Schneider can catch the balls that are hit at him, and okay, are there going to be a couple over the course of a week if he's playing every day in left field, but he's not going to get the Dalton Varsho can get? Guess what? Dalton Varsho, in a close game or a game the Blue Jays are leading in, he can play defense as a late game replacement.
Yeah, that's great.
It's just, it seems pretty clear, as much as the top guys are going to start to hit, that the mm-hmm Blue Jays are going to need offense mm-hmm out of the bottom of their order. And where's that coming from?
That's just it. They can't afford to just have that same horrible, immediately everybody's out, bottom of the order.
Yeah.
And it feels like when he's in there, that's the way it's going.
Yeah, it certainly does. And it's
just, could you actually believe that this guy, and I don't think he's going to end up a platoon player, I just don't, but now I kind of have you can see it more. You can see more off days for this guy. And I said this to you yesterday. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, and I've shopped this around to, you know, real Blue Jays people who cover the team, but while Jansen's hurt, why not just try him back again?
I just asked Ben Nicholson-Smith on our show about that exact thing. And it feels like in season, it's a tougher
thing. But they had an opportunity to do it during the offseason, and the Jansen got hurt in spring.
Yeah. I mean, right out of the chute, because when the trade was consummated, you're like, oh, this is a guy who's like not just like an emergency catcher. He's caught 30 times for the Diamondbacks, and like the defensive numbers are good.
Yeah.
Wow, what an incredible, like, super duper utility player. If you're playing elite level center field defense and you can catch at like a high rate too, that's unbelievable. But clearly there must have been some understanding that you take him out from those 30 games behind the plate, or the mental toll that it takes just to be prepared to do that over the course of the season, it's going to increase your offensive upside, which hasn't happened.
I always love that with guys who suck at the plate. It's always, well, now they're taking away some of the defense, so I don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you mean like standing out there in the field?
Yeah, catching is the one position where you're...
I'm saying the other stuff when it's other guys.
Yeah.
More DH focus, less in the standing in right field. You're like, okay.
But if you're looking to recoup some value out of Dalton Varsho, it's not playing elite level defense again at a non-premium position in left field. It's playing at least competent, if not above average defense behind the plate, especially when you got a guy that is as injured as often as Danny Jansen is, and who's a pending free agent as well. And you can easily look forward to a 2025 season where it's Alejandro Kirk and Dalton Varsho splitting the catching duties. Like, maybe he's a full-time catcher next season. Although Kevin Kiermaier is only on a one-year deal, and you do factually need a center fielder next year.
And he will be. And eventually he will be. I still think that the biggest mistake of the offseason was not the Isaiah Kiner-Falefa contract. It was re-signing Kevin Kiermaier.
How dare you after that game?
But that's the thing. I love watching him play defense. He's phenomenal. But that's where you're supposed to be getting value from Varsho.
Yeah.
That's how Varsho fits on this team now, is playing center field. And all of a sudden,
but he's not as good as Kiermaier is doing it.
He's not. But this is why wouldn't you just sign Kiermaier and not trade for Dalton Varsho? Mm. That probably would have been much better had you just kept, you know, the better left fielder, not at defense, but at, you know, everything else essentially, and kept your top prospect who seems like the real deal and is also very good at defense. And I hate really relitigating this over and over again, but that's the part I just don't understand, is why did you bring back Kiermaier when it was so clear and obvious that you needed to put Dalton into center field and then bring in a bopper to play in left? Then it can be a platoon, right? Then you can have Davis Schneider playing there and mix in the Cavan Biggio game, plus another bat that you could have signed that it didn't matter whether or not they could actually play defense or not. Let Dalton Varsho be your everyday center fielder. No one's going to be pissed off if he's playing plus defense there, because he gets treated like Kevin Kiermaier, where you go, oh, we traded for the guy who leads the league in defensive runs saved, and you can spin it that way. It's another year where he's basically going to get trounced for not providing value in the trade.
You know where the mistake gets fixed is if you don't feel, because of the weight of the trade, that you have to play him every day. Against lefties, it's usually one of them sitting, right? Somebody's playing center field and somebody's sitting against lefties.
Yeah.
And it kind of, they take their turns. Why can't that be the case all the time? Like, against all comers, you're only getting one of Dalton Varsho or Kevin Kiermaier in the lineup on most days against all comers. And that, whether that means, a Cavan Biggio left field day, or a Davis Schneider left field day, or even like an Ernie Clement left field day, or, God forbid, somebody else who can swing a capable bat in left field. Offense, you need to lean offense with all your decisions, it seems, going forward with this team. That being said, maybe there's something more there with Dalton Varsho. His splits home road last season were very
weird. We've done this.
He did factually hit 20 home runs in a horrible season.
Exactly. He can run into him. He's got power when he runs into it, but it's just that.
That sounds like a great catcher, right? It's like, that was the whole thing with Danny Jansen. It was like, he plays great defense and he's not going to hit for a high batting average or take all that many walks, but he's swinging for the fences. He can do damage.
Yeah.
Sounds like a nice catcher.
That's it, though. What we're getting to is, I think that the Blue Jays are starting to find out that his value in left field is just not, it's not worth losing those other guys' ABs. That if he's a left fielder, he's a platoon player. Yeah. If he's a catcher, or if he's a center fielder.
But he's not a platoon player, because that means you have to start him against righties.
Yeah, you're right.
He's not a platoon player. He's a part-time player.
Yeah, that's it. Part-time player.
He's a part-time player. Yeah. And, I guess whoever's going good between him and Kiermaier gets the majority of the starts. But again, Kiermaier is
better defensively.
Sure. Yeah. You lean Kiermaier. Uh-huh. But, say Varsho gets on a hot streak.
Sure. Which will happen.
Sure. Maybe. And then he's playing center field more than Kiermaier. And Kiermaier's coming off the bench. And then late in games, when you're protecting a lead, then you do your max prevent defense outfield.
Amazing.
And, Davis Schneider's on the bench. But that's his role.
Yeah, it used to be that you could get Jackie Bradley Jr. for free.
Yeah. Zimmer on a roster right now?
Exactly. Okay, last thing from the Blue Jays, and I want to take a break and talk to you about why we didn't care more about Zach Edey. But do you think there's pressure on the rotation this week? Like the rest of the rotation, because clearly Barrios is awesome. And there was some weird, the fancy stat people were trying to tell me that he was basically lucking into those first two starts. And I went, I watched them. I don't know how
that's the case.
Yeah. And also, it's the stats people are so strange when they talk about sample size when it's not the thing they want. And then they go, oh, well, these are some troubling trends. And you go, wait, which is it? Is it sample size, or is it troubling trends off of two starts? Pick a lane. But he's dominant again. He looks awesome. But the rest of the rotation, Gausman had the velocity down. We're basically blaming the cold.
It's weird when you have exactly 12 months ago, the exact same thing happening and then him being fine.
Yeah, I get. So that's fine. And I'm trying to diminish it. The only thing is that he's coming off of that injury and he had a shortened spring.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a feeling of, oh, is he going to pitch? Which day is he going to throw? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you could, at least if you were a fan and you were on the outside of it, you would look at it and say, did they rush him if the velo stays down? You've got Bassett, who, he's been getting lit up.
I mean, it hasn't been an abject disaster, and the defense has let him down, especially the first game.
He gave up, I think, 11 base runners in his last start.
Yeah.
And it was over 4 1/3 innings. Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's been good.
No, it hasn't been good.
Bowden Francis has been a nightmare.
I mean, that's your fifth starter, and I think the possibility very much exists of, one more Bowden Francis start. If we see him look that way against the Rockies, hard to imagine that they're not at least turning to Mitch White. that, yeah, Bowden France has got to figure it out in Buffalo again. Mm. But that's your fifth starter. Like, I don't even consider him part of the rotation, right? Like, that guy is, like, going
to
be...
I wouldn't have either if Manoa was able to actually throw a strike.
Yeah, they do have options now, and Yuriel Rodriguez looked good, and I know he's not stretched out.
Sure, I just don't know how many innings Yuriel Rodriguez can throw.
Yeah, but they can piece it together. Like, if it's him and Ricky Tiedemann and whatever.
Ricky Tiedemann is not coming here for months, and what I've been told is he is not ready.
Yeah, I mean, apparently, according to John Schneider, he was, like, in consideration to break camp with this team.
I'm telling you that that's a lot of hot
anyways,
air.
But that's the rotation spot that was always going to be in flux, and it is for a lot of teams, right? Uh-huh. The fifth starter spot. Sure. The other four dudes, I think Bassett is the guy that you have to look at most as a potential regression candidate. Mm. I would have said Kikuchi as well, but,
no,
like,
he's nasty.
The stuff is there, right? And it just... Something clicked with the pitch clock.
Yep.
That he's now, he is.
Fixed his brain.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Just throw. And he went, okay, I'm better.
Don't you remember
Siddle doing those things where, those features where he would break down Kikuchi's starts when he was wild and going, hey, just, you know, throw.
Well, and Caleb Joseph was spring training teammates with him his last season in Major League Baseball. And he said, yeah, this is a guy that he needs to get out of his own head. He's his own worst enemy at times.
It really did work.
It was
incredible.
The pitch
clock doesn't work for everybody, but it worked for him.
It did. So, and again, you're talking about natural, like, raw stuff. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this was always a possibility for him. It's why the Blue Jays went out and acquired him, because he's a lefty who throws 97. Mm-hmm. Chris Bassett doesn't do that.
Mm-mm.
He's doing it with guts and guile, which is cool. I love that.
Yeah, everybody
love
loves it.
Love it, love it, love it when it works.
I love it when it works, yeah. I like it when he gets out of the jams.
Yeah.
But he's been building up a lot of jams.
Yeah.
When you're doing a jam every inning, you're like, ooh, you're probably not going to get all these jams.
And also when you throw a career high in innings in your 30s.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... And you throw, low 90s. Yeah. Of course, that's going to be the guy. I think today's a big start against a Mariners team that hasn't hit either. Mm-hmm. This season. I mean, in one respect, I'm kind of, like, nervous because, like, they're due. But, that should be a favorable matchup, you would think, for Chris Bassett. But, he's very much – he's on my radar, I would say.
So you're saying no pressure on Bowden Francis?
Pressure on him.
Sure.
Because his career could be over. That's – to bring everything back to David Schneider. Like,
no, please don't.
But, these guys that are fringe Major League Baseball players who do not have pedigree – every time they perform, once you get sent down, the possibility of never coming back up is a real one.
I think the Bowden Francis thing is slightly more important than you're making out to seem, though, just because Yariel Rodriguez, again, we don't know if he's going to be properly stretched out. I'm telling you that the Ricky Tiedemann thing is not happening, at least for months. Like, I promise you, it's not going to go down.
Sure. That's what they said about Alek Manoah when he showed up in May.
Sure. I'm telling you, it's not going to go down.
Yeah, okay.
Manoah is looking horrible.
Yeah.
And he's, I had Ricky Romero on yesterday, and Ricky's a great dude who doesn't like adding other pressure to people and doesn't. And he sounded very. I thought his answer to the Manoah question was going to be, it's his first single A start. Mm-hmm. You know, the velo's up. He was going to be kind of towing the party line here. And he was like, yeah, it's not good. I was like, whoa, that's kind of surprising that this is where we're going with it. Bowden Francis, to me, had a little bit more buzz during spring. And if you look back on last year's success in terms of this team making it to the postseason, winning 89 games, it was that they had a full rotation, that it was five guys that were getting the job
done. They had Alek Manoah being horrible for a lot of the season.
And then what happened? When he was gone.
Then Hyunjin Ryu returned.
Ryu came back and was solid.
Yeah.
And
they had one rotation spot that was a nightmare for a lot of the season.
And then it normalized down the stretch, and they got unbelievable starting pitching where they had five guys that were giving you quality outings every single time. And I'm sort of looking at it this year and saying, I feel less confident in that path. I really do. With the Bassett thing and now Bowden Francis, what he's shown, I was really hoping that Bowden Francis had stuff enough. Like the profile was someone that I thought was going to be
struck people
quality.
Out too. Like,
that's
it. And the Yankees started, he looked like he was taking steps. He gave up one bad home run. It's bad. That's the worst home run you can give up. It's a grand slam.
It's funny. Yes, that was a bad one. But the third home run he gave up in the Astros game was actually way worse.
Yeah.
And they're trying to...
Whenever you're talking about the third home run for a starting pitcher, usually a bad one.
And it was in the second inning or third inning.
Well, walking the nine-hitter in the Yankee game, too. Yeah, like, too many walks.
Not even challenging him. I think it was four-pitch walk, five-pitch walk.
It's... I don't know. Maybe this is a guy... I was very much aware of this possibility with a guy who had success against major league hitters who were all trying to hit, right? And it's not like he was always facing the bottom of the order when he was coming in to blow a game. So he was coming in to blow a games, mm-hmm. right? The game was decided. He was the guy that came in to save the bullpen. And that's different than starting a game in a season in which your team has playoff aspirations and you have to figure out what pitch combination you use to try and get through mm-hmm. a lineup three times. And I think the second start was better than the first. And maybe there's reason to believe that the third can be better than the second, and especially when you consider the team he's facing. But yeah, I think one more bad start, especially against a bad Rockies team, would put him in serious jeopardy early in the season of losing his job. Mitch White exists, and like he's not looked horrible. But yeah, it's the fifth starter. I'm not going to get too wrapped up in the fifth starter spot. But you can't have two starters where you're like,
that's what I'm saying. That's why I think that there's pressure on the rotation this week. I feel like, yes.
Bassett specifically.
No, I think it's all three. One is Gausman can't have the velo stay down. Because if the velo is down to start the next outing, you're like, oh my God, the season might be over.
Yeah.
it's that terrifying. So I'm sorry. I'm not just going to ignore that.
No.
I hope it's warmer and I hope he's better and he's fine. And he says he feels fine and whatever. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, but you're not telling me that the first inning, you're not.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, so there's that.
But yeah, history and his comments have left me warm.
Yep, and if Chris Bassett can't get you a quality start
mm-hmm.
for the third straight time,
mm-hmm.
I would say that then nervousness starts to rise.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that you might have a fifth starter who isn't going to exceed expectations and who might need to bump out, when the strength of this team was starting pitching next year, mm-hmm. it's kind of I think there's a lot of pressure this week and it starts tonight with Bassett.
There's confidence in two-fifths of, to me, three-fifths of the rotation.
Yeah, I'm 3-2.
Because like Gausman's first start looked pretty darn good.
Yep. Okay, we're in the same spot. All right, let's take a quick break. And yesterday really was your day of the year. Next.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
First of all, Benny, you're a sport for sticking around today because you stayed up late last night. It's a late one for you. I don't know when you got home on the train, but you left. You did the thing, too, which was I procured the tickets
mm-hmm.
and somehow I paid for more beers.
That's your fault.
Yeah, that's fine, but whatever.
Do you know why it's your fault?
I do, but I don't.
Because, at the bar, first I volunteered and you're like, I'm going to pay for them here because you're going to get all of them at the ballpark. And then we got... Yeah, you know, we got these VIP seats, and some of us were wearing our lanyards, and we were given a little gift card, and so we obviously used those.
I couldn't find my gift card.
And you came back, and you're like, you have my gift card? And I was like,
no. The worst part was that I fully just panicked right away.
There's no line there either,
I know, but I ordered the beers, and then I was like, hold on, I have a gift card. And she went, okay. And then I couldn't find it for 2 seconds. And I was like, never mind.
Let me just pay for these that I don't have to pay for.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
it was dumb.
I mean, how many rounds were you?
Too, you were like, here's a $10 bill. I was like, thanks.
That
so
was
much.
For my beer.
Yeah, that was great. No, it was
I was supposed to pay for yours
cash,
as well?
Giving me cash is, first of all, I said this
the
when
bill
we passed
had not arrived yet.
We passed a busker.
Mm-hmm.
Is it that, the busking business...
Mm-hmm.
How do they survive?
Yeah.
There's no more cash.
Yeah.
People don't have cash anymore. I was the ultimate cash person.
Mm-hmm.
I was always carrying cash because I had no money for forever. I had no faith in my cards. And so I'd always be like, don't worry about this. I got this covered immediately.
Yeah.
Because I'd had too many trips to the grocery store where it was like NSF. And I was like, I think it's just a wonky card. They're like, no, it says insufficient funds. It's the rudest thing, by the way, that anything does. As a guy who's been hit with the insufficient funds, unnecessary, okay? It should just have a secret code where they know you're broke.
Yeah.
So it's like code error 006.
Client too good looking.
Yeah. Your money's no good here. Because you have none. Because it's all that exists in your mind. But I just immediately panicked. I have no coolness when it comes down to that stuff. Anyways, good job.
I bought some King cans.
Yeah, you did. Great. Yeah.
Those are not cheap.
Hey, I think that they are very reasonably priced for what you are getting.
Sure. Don't disagree.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, I factually spent some money.
Sure.
I don't know if you did outspend me.
I know I did, but that's okay. this is a classic cheap guy move, gaslighting me into being like, actually,
I volunteered to pay for the beers at the bar, and
By
then
the way,
again,
We were monitoring the Leafs-Penguins game. I have it recorded. I don't know. I think I'll probably go back and watch the entire game this afternoon. But now I'm just working off the highlights that we have. That clip of Dubas and Spezza leaving in overtime being upset, and Spezza's face specifically, because both guys are traitors. And I frankly wouldn't even let them back into Ontario. Like, that should be, like, those guys should be banned from the province, but whatever. You know, Doug Ford's worried about paper bags. He should be worried about that. Like, hey, if he did a press conference, he's like, Kyle Dubas will never come back to Ontario. I'd be like, I have to vote for this guy. you've got my vote. I love that clip so much. It's going to basically exist in my phone till the day I die. I'm so happy that the Leafs won, but I'm going to talk about that a little later. We did get to the bar for the second half of the men's championship game, but what a dud. It was just over. Well, but it wasn't even over. It was like a 10-point-ish game, nine. Purdue kept trying to make little mini runs, but Connecticut was just way better than them. Mm-hmm. And the finals end up being predictable, which is what everybody in college sports said it was going to be, which was UConn. Mm-hmm. They have five guys who are going to the NBA draft. But just stay short on this one, because I do want to talk to you about the eclipse yesterday. But why do you think we didn't care at all about Zach Edey? Because this is a country that historically does get behind Canadians when it comes to sport. And this dude, for whatever reason, just didn't seem to resonate at all to me.
Yeah, college basketball is a weird one in this country, right? Like, I mean, there's obviously a niche that gets into it, but it never does, like, bananas numbers. Like, the TV rights are never something that you're like, oh, it's a real bidding war for the March Madness rights on TV. I don't necessarily think... Right? Like, and I know...
Doing a lot of guesswork here, but yeah, go on.
No, that one's not guesswork. Okay. Like, I remember the last time there was a negotiation that not exactly being...
Oh, do you? You're at the table, they invited you in, they're like, hey, Ben, bring your huge head in here and let us know what you're
I don't
thinking.
Know, isn't it the nature of Zach Edey and the same thing, like, every college basketball fan was saying about him, that he's not exactly super sexy, like, fun time watch, right?
Yeah. Super sexy fun time watch. I would watch that show.
I mean, yeah, what, 37 points yesterday? I was like, okay, great, got it. Well, yeah, Purdue took what, like 5 threes the entire game? Yeah, no, he's not a guy that is the most athletic. He scores all his points by being 7'4" against 19-year-olds, and we'll see if there's a professional future for him. But no, I think it's just the nature of his game, man.
I think it's that, and then also that we've been desensitized. We're spoiled now. Mm-hmm. We now have money, right? Like, we've inherited
Speak
wealth.
For yourself.
No, I'm just saying that we live in a world where Shea Gilgeous Alexander exists. We've had awesome Canadians now. We've paid attention to them.
Yeah, we did that Kansas team with Andrew Wiggins.
That's it, where we watched every single game, and now Canadians playing in basketball, it's like, it's just very run of the mill. We have a lot of different events that matter. We just had the World Championships of Basketball, where we ended up being in the United States, and Zach Edey was on the bench. And to me, it's more, you got to do, as crazy as this sounds, I think it is a lot of what you're saying, because if he was a guard, Kemba Walker, and he was having this run with Purdue, people would have cared a lot more, because it would have been more interesting to watch. People can't relate to a guy who's 7'3" and just, you know, shoots a little baby hook over top of everybody and then just, freaks his way into a million rebounds. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there is an element of it where, had he been one of the first Canadians, right? He's a lottery pick. We weren't used to having this. People would have cared a lot more, but we're used to it now. So sucks for him. But now we're going to see how much people care when he goes in the lottery, because, apparently that's what's going to happen for him. I hate saying this, but I would be crushed if my team took Zach Edey in the first round. Like, I mean,
it more speaks to the lack of talent in this year's draft.
It definitely does.
Zach Edey. I mean, Zach Edey was already player of the year. Like, this isn't new, what we've seen from Zach Edey.
So you got good eclipse. I thought it was hilarious in the city because it was so cloudy. Nobody could see anything. Yeah. I actually went outside during the peak time, whatever it was, like 3:15. No, but I went outside like around like 3:10, 3:15, and I stayed out there till like 3:25. I was out there for basically 10-ish minutes, and I felt like, first of all, a complete idiot, because I had no idea where the sun was. Like, I was like kind of like looking around.
You can kind of like,
it was like, everybody's looking over there.
In the west.
And that's why I was looking west, but I couldn't find the sun. And there was a million people in the park, and I went, oh, they all probably know what they're doing. They don't know where to look for the sun. There was people that had the glasses on that were just staring up at the sky.
Yeah.
I went, they probably know what they're doing. Then when it was 319 and it got kind of dark because it didn't get fully dark because, again, it's Toronto, there were some people who clapped, and I thought that was pretty funny. It was like the nerdiest thing of all time.
Yeah, you don't clap at the end of a movie. You don't clap for a landing on a plane. You certainly don't clap for an eclipse.
I think it would have been cool to actually, like, seeing some of the photos, it does look beautiful, and I know you saw it, so you were
awesome.
Yes,
I had the
you
best
were blown
experience.
Away. But what I will say is, don't make jokes about the eclipse.
Oh, they're very sensitive.
Because the people who love eclipses, they get real defensive.
Eclipsers.
The eclipsers is like get really defensive when you make fun of them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of people, I'm guessing, is a lot of people made a lot of big plans for the eclipse, and a lot of people were disappointed with how that ended up.
Yeah. Well, everybody on the show had glasses.
Mm-hmm.
So
I had glasses too.
Yeah, I know, but you were in a place where I guess Hamilton had a very clear view, and so did you in Burlington.
But it was cloudy all day. Like, I had no idea. I had neighbor friends who, like, their family came down from who knows where to stay with them the night before, and they were like, we looked at the forecast, and we're traveling to Fort Erie. We got to get somewhere where there was going to be no cloud cover. They got screwed, and if they'd just not gone anywhere, they would have gotten the incredible view that I got, which was cloudy until 20 minutes before the totality, and then absolutely beautifully clear, and then continuing until 20 minutes after the totality. It was unfreaking believable. But yeah, what you had is, I know my brother-in-law also like lives in New York City,
so
in Brooklyn, went all the way up to Niagara Falls, stayed there overnight, and yeah, they got nothing. So I think what you hit on, I think the people in your mentions are the folks that are like, no, they have to, like, it's coping. They're definitely coping really, really hard.
Yeah.
It would be a lot easier if everybody got this incredible, like, if you wanted to, you could have had this incredible eclipse experience. The problem was a lot of people couldn't. And I think when you hit that raw nerve, you're like the John Schneider of eclipse, where it's like you're the avatar of, like, of bad eclipse.
Yeah. I didn't know Bourne was a huge eclipse guy.
Why did was he like angry at your tweet?
No, he was he was just stuck in studio during the show.
Oh, he was mad about it.
Yeah, and I sent him a text to be like, "Hey, don't even worry that you're missing." He didn't even reply. Oh. Yeah, he's pretty upset. Okay, so yeah, all the other guys who got glasses, Simon, you were.
Yeah, I mean, so we were out on like my bat, and like we caught a little bit of the early part of the eclipse where it was going over, and then for the middle 45 minutes we got nothing.
The best part,
and then at the end every now and then we looked out again and we're like, oh yeah, you can still kind of see,
that's what it's all about, is kind of seeing it. The best part is that, again, partial eclipse happens all the time, and so
total eclipses happen all the time. In 2026 you go to Spain, you can see a total eclipse.
What I'm saying is, though, the whole thing about being here was getting to see the full eclipse, right? Or the near full eclipse. And then so we get it finally the one time, and nobody ends up getting to see it. They all just see partial eclipses, which is like, okay.
Yeah, but man, that partial eclipse.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Live up to the hype. Live up to the hype.
Yeah, it's
that was pretty good.
Armin, you bring your girl up to some romantic spot and try to do the eclipse?
No, we watched from Riverdale Park's facing west, like on the hill. There's so many. It was just comical that there was that many people clapping.
I mean, it was just so funny. I felt
around.
Can I tell you? It kind of felt like doomsday-ish to me, where we're all just standing outside, like, staring up at the sky. I was like, this is probably exactly what it would be like if the world was ending. Everybody just going out and standing in parks and looking up and going,
You didn't see that tweet
that
I sent you?
The asteroid coming? No.
I sent you a tweet.
I don't look at anything you send me.
Yeah, you should, because this is a good one. It's not me. It's some guy said, shout out to the kid in my 12-year-old daughter's class who had confused the words eclipse and apocalypse and approach the end of the world today with calm bravery.
Yeah, that is good. Apparently, your kid was terrified to look up at the sky.
I was going to say, like, in 100 years when we have to do this again in this region, let's, like, take it easy with, like, the freaking out of the kids. Like, my 6-year-old was terrified of the eclipse and wouldn't look up even with the glasses on. He's like, no, I'm gonna go blind. He's like, no, the glasses are so that you can look at the sun and, like, do you normally look at the sun? Like, just do what you do normally. You don't have to be terrified of the big glowing orb in the sky, which exists every day.
So for you, eclipse lived up to the hype.
It's awesome.
Yeah, okay, so 10 out of 10?
11 out of 10.
Okay, cool.
I could see stars. Yeah. Like, we saw the whole totality. It was amazing.
You know what it felt like in Toronto?
What?
Every day.
Yeah. Like, I had my buddy.
It felt like a thunderstorm rolling in.
Yeah, it was just, it was genuinely the most, oh, yeah, this feels like every single day that we've had in the city for this entire winter where it was gray and it got dark early. And the thing is about the city, too, is it never, even when you get the full eclipse, it doesn't go fully dark. It's too bright in the city. You don't see any stars. You saw nothing.
No,
it was just clouds.
Street lights go on.
No, it was actually the ugliest full eclipse of all time. There's no way.
That's actually your glasses the whole time?
Yeah, I use my, well, not during the 1 minute of totality. You can look at the sun because the sun is not visible. It is literally just a black disc with like the solar flares sticking out of the side. I saw that for a minute. It was amazing.
Man, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, that's good for you. That's good for you. Yeah. I couldn't have cared less. I actually thought it was so funny. Like, I felt so stupid for even going out and looking, and I felt like such a fraud that I even went. I was like, hate myself for being here. But then I got great pleasure out of looking around and seeing everybody with their glasses staring up at the sky and going like, that's what you get. That's what you get, Armin. That's what you get, Mike. That's what you get, Simon.
No, you deserve
Come on.
Yeah, you deserve all the hate you got.
I tried.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Hey, guess what? I can take it. I'm fine with
it. From the Eclipse Nerds?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could probably take
it. Do your worst. Yeah. Do your worst, Nerds.
You're not scared. You're not scared of the sky guys,
100
eh?
Years. Yeah, no, look, I'm not afraid of the sky guys. I'm just like, all the
sky guys,
all the images Eclipsers. Of people looking up. There's just, you can't look dumber than wearing those glasses and
it
then staring
tough.
At the sky. It's the worst visual. Like, your mouth all open.
That's the thing. Your mouth has to be open.
You got to open your mouth to fully soak in the eclipse. You can't do it with your mouth closed. Anyway, close your mouth and get out of here. Joe House is next. What a day. Little hungover after home opener. Jays win. I win a million bets. Kyle Dubas gets screen grabbed, walking off all sour after the Leafs win. And the Masters are close. Oh. Nothing, honestly, nothing is curing my hangover like thinking about me being on the couch Saturday. I don't care how, I love when it's so nice outside, during the Masters. People are like, you should go outside today. I'll be like, I won't.
Yeah, it's nicer in Augusta.
No, I won't. I'll be sitting here on the couch. I think the same of our next guest, although I don't know if he's going to be down there. Joe House, Fairway Rolling, East Coast Bias Pods on the Ringer Network. What's up, brother? Great to hear from you.
JD, I love it when you call me Big Papa.
Yeah, I won't.
I mean, I'm going to try and tone it down a little bit. You sound a little hung, buddy.
I am. I'm a little hungover. Guess what? I really enjoy baseball live and Bud Lights, and I like winning bets, and all those things came together yesterday, and it was beautiful. Like, it was a really beautiful day down at the ballpark. We got a nicely new renovated Rogers Center. We actually don't have a dump of a ballpark anymore in this city. It's great. Like, what better time? Like, this is just so great. This is what it's all for. This is what all these quiet media days and crap, what are we going to talk about in sports and this horrible Raptor season? This is what it's all about. Having baseball, having the Masters, having playoff hockey around the corner, meaningful basketball around the, like, this is it. March Madness final stunk, but we had it all. It was great. I'm just soaking it in, Joe.
Yeah, this is, we're back to that sort of classic debate, which month is the best sports month. Mm-hmm. April, always way up there. October throws its hat in the ring.
Yeah.
Because of, the onset of NFL football plus college football plus the other, NFL, NHL and basketball get going. But it's tough to beat April.
Man, April is just – well, the thing is, though, is that – the Masters just adds such a class to April where you're like, hey, we do have this like as a luxury product. Tough to beat. But to me, there's just something about the intensity of playoff baseball that always gets me. I don't know. It's a toss-up. I just love both. Anyways, so Sergio Garcia, right? He goes viral. He tweets, we're coming for that green jacket, right? And I'm like, ooh. But all I thought was, all right, LIV, they got a great chance. They got Rom. And I think there's 13 LIV golfers in the Masters this year. And all I could think was, though, do we still care about LIV versus PGA? Like, is this still a thing?
Well, no.
Yeah.
Because there is no versus.
That's what I mean. It's like
no
you guys are saying.
About either one.
Yeah.
All you have to do is look at the ratings.
Yeah. So it's like they're trying to sell this thing that really is not a thing. But I guess we're going to pretend?
Only Sergio. Only tone-deaf, dummy, social media moron Sergio. Like, nobody's looking to him for... Yeah. The insightful or the clever take of the day.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he played well, because that does, you know, create some interest. And 13 live golfers in the field at this year's Masters, and, you know, it does create some interesting opportunities. I'm going to be looking in the head-to-head markets. I'm on a few guys, a few of the live guys, but I'm also looking to fade a few of them.
Okay. Well, let's start with that. Who are you fading?
Rom.
Okay. Ooh, I think that what a sexy way to start, Joe. Okay, why?
Because the prices are going to be inflated, and it's not warranted. He hasn't played a competitive 72-hole tournament since November, since the finale of the DP World Tour. And before that, he played once, you know, at the end of October. So two proper 72-hole tournaments. Now, I don't have any question about his competitive desire, but you layer on top the added responsibility of being the defending champ, and that's a whole set of routine-altering obligations. He has to host the dinner. Now, I mean, I think he's going to be sort of up for all of it, but it changes the routine. And on top of that, the guy has been doing nothing but complaining about being on live. He wishes he was on the tour. So I don't like where his head is at. There isn't a great track record for guys defending. And he's coming in, from my perspective, and I don't know if this is public information. Hopefully I'm not revealing anything. His family is growing. So he's just got a lot on his plate. And I don't think it's the right kind of formula for somebody that's got the focus that Augusta requires.
So thank you for this, because my first thought when I looked at the odds was, how can Scheffler be plus 350 and Rahm be plus 900? I have to play Rahm. And now I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not going to play Rahm, because I like this information. Also, I like the way that you said his family is growing. It could mean anything. You know, it's like he could have a child who's growing up. Like, he's a growing boy. Does he have a boy? I don't know. Either way, I like this logic. I like everything behind it. I love also how this is basically this is what golf is now, is guys leave and they go to live, and then they kind of complain about playing on live, because they basically sell their souls for this thing, and then they realize that that's the bargain they make, and they go, oh, I wish I could go back. And you're like, you can't, because didn't you see all the other guys that did it and complain, except for the dudes who are 100 and obviously weren't going to win this thing anyways? That's actually the most interesting one to me, is Rory has been, this is my only live thing that I care about left. Rory was basically Mr. I'm the guy who's going to defend the honor of the PGA. And then it ended up with him being like, oh, actually, I never even really didn't like it. I've sort of always loved it. He kind of, to me, has been hinting that he's ready to go over there. But the thing is, if he ends up winning, right, if he can put the 2011 meltdown behind him, then he gets the, you know, exemption. He's allowed, no matter what, lifetime to the Masters. Do you think that if he wins, if he was ever to win this thing, he's the next guy to go to live?
I'm going to say no, but the reason is because I think they're closer than ever to having a deal where the two tours kind of rejoin. There is an alliance in the offing that I think will be realized over the course of this calendar year. And so, you know, he has his payday coming from a lot of other sources. The TGL, the television product, that's going to debut next year. The PGA Tour owns it. It's going to be on Monday night on ESPN. He's got equity in that. Like, he's got his hands in enough other pots that he doesn't need the giant paycheck.
You think this is his year?
I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a ticket on him. It goes without saying.
No.
I feel like I'm in the top five of world's, foremost Rory truthers. But I was very encouraged by the last round at the Valero in San Antonio.
He went to
Salvo Charman. You know, his approach play has been so bad over the course of the year. I just don't have any confidence in it, which very well could be this is the circumstance finally where he gets across the goal line.
This is my favorite part of the yearly Rory narrative, is it doesn't matter really how he's playing. Because if he's playing poorly, people are going, no, this is a good thing because he's not peaking at the wrong time. And then if he's playing great, people are like, oh, he's playing great at the right time heading into Augusta. And you're like, okay, fine. It's always the same. It's always the same. He's not going to win. And I think to me, the most interesting thing with Rory is that I think he's 34 now. Is he 34, 35? He's somewhere there, like in that age range. The last 10 winners, six of them were in their 20s, three in their 30s, and then obviously only Tiger Woods, the guy in his 40s. I feel like the thing we're starting to learn about Augusta is, you know, it used to be, oh, you'd learn the course and you were the wily vet. Now it's not. This is a young man's game. This is a young man's tournament. And I feel like the window of opportunity for Rory is like really coming to a close here over the next couple of years.
Maybe so. I mean, he remains as physically fit as anybody on tour. He doesn't seem to be the guy that's showing up every, you know, 8 months with a new injury. Mm-hmm. And he continues to outdrive every single other guy on tour, both in distance and his accuracy is impeccable. So if he's able to maintain his health, I think he can compete. I mean, I put him up against any of the young guys in terms of like the physical attributes. Now it's just in his head. Augusta's in his head, and you know, we're going to have bad weather. You know, the Bobby Jones, the ghost of Bobby Jones can't let us just have one easy, you know, 4 days of sun. It's going to be a mess on Thursday. I don't know how much of the round we'll get in. And so everybody's hunting now for which side of the draw is going to be the more favorable draw, whether it's late Thursday, early Friday, or vice versa. And, you know, so we'll see that as the field, as the draw gets announced. But if Rory comes out and shoots 68 or something on Thursday and then backs it up with something just a little bit under par, even 70 on Friday, then people are going to be on it.
Yeah. Can I ask you what your Tiger feeling is right now? Because I didn't even know he was playing until this week.
It feels like we are super lucky if we get two full rounds out of him based on where he is physically. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bet him, and in fact, I have bet him to make the cut. That is out of obligation, duty, and lifelong fandom.
I was going to say, I feel like this is the price of being a Tiger Woods fan, is that you have to bet on him whenever he's in a tournament. Like, it's because you can't not have the receipts of if something miraculous does happen, like when he did win the Masters, that you don't have the proof that you were actually invested, that you were a true believer.
Yeah, so I'm not willing to do anything other than make the cut.
Yeah, of course.
I just hope for him to be around on the weekend. There's no guarantee that even if he makes the weekend, he can play on the weekend. But I have a parlay. I want to see the old guys. I have a parlay. You can get this around plus 260. Okay. Phil and Tiger both to make the cut is like plus 260.
Okay.
And we'll see if the golf gods, how favorable – what kind of mood they're in come Saturday. Imagine those two guys paired up on Saturday.
I got to tell you, though, I'm always a never bet Tiger Woods because you never get a good number guy. Like, I always feel as though it's such a public bet that it's my one time where I get to feel like a sharp, because I am Joe Public. Like, I am the most public guy. I'm like, I love overs and betting the home teams and the teams I like. Like, it's the dumbest thing ever. I bet for what I'm cheering for all the time. I catch myself doing it. And I once read when Hunter S. Thompson, he wrote a bunch of articles for ESPN. He put them together in a book. And he was like, yeah, the dumbest thing people do is bet on their own team. And I used to love going to parties and goat people into betting on their team when I knew they sucked, and I was like, that's me. He would have got me every single time. And so, but the Tiger
Woods, why we get along so well.
That's it. It's like, it's like, what did you do this year? You bet the Wizards over their win total. It's like, yeah, that's exactly.
Of course.
Yeah, that's right. How could you not? How could you be a true fan and not? Right. It's weird with me with Tiger because, okay, I know he's going for the streak, not missing the cut. Great. That's the bar for Tiger Woods now. Like, that's something that we care about. I guess maybe it's something he cares about. I always thought Tiger was going to be someone who went away with grace, and now it just feels like it might end up not so much.
The grace part, I think, is kind of out the window. I'm not so sure that that's his, you know, in his DNA, but the streak matters. It's another, you know, sort of point for his legacy, and by all accounts, you know, he shouldn't be with us. He should have died from that car crash, so all of these performances where he's on the stage and making the cut, he's still, like, you know, if you're on the grounds at Augusta on Thursday or Friday and Tiger is there, you can feel it. The crowd swells. There's a, you know, even with the most respectful patrons on planet Earth, you can feel it. It's alive. It's buzzing.
Yeah. So I just, to me, the cut streak is like, where does that get mentioned in Tiger Woods' career, right? It's like paragraph 82. Like,
yes, in the 80s. That's
that's what I mean. So to me, it's kind of like, all right, I don't care. But yeah, that's it to me, is it's like, you're, if you're there and you get to go see Tiger Woods, that's awesome. But for me, watching on TV, the copious amount of cutaways we're going to get to him, I'm going to go, all right, I actually don't need this. I feel like we're actually kind of in the spot we expected to be with him the last couple of years, where it's reasonable, where we are talking about the rest of the field, and Tiger narratives are kind of appropriate finally.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, your observation at the top, you didn't even really think about him being in the field, because we haven't really seen him play very much competitive golf. And when he does play, he has to withdraw. So I, you know, and the wonderful thing now with the way the technology has developed, if you don't want to watch Tiger, don't watch the main broadcast. You know, come up with your own curated, you know, stream your own, pick your favorites, you know, watch every shot of every of some guy that you've definitely bet on.
That is the best. I tried to invent that a million years ago. I called it Golf Pervert, where it was just like, you had the cams, and you're just watching the cams, the different ones, seeing who who's up, and they finally got it. And they didn't call it Golf Pervert, which was smart. That was a better branding
probably
decision.
Probably for the best.
Yeah, probably for the best. Okay, so do you think, let me ask you this. If the PGA could pick, who would win, right? They'd be like, hey, who do we want? Would they rather Scotty than anybody else? Like, do they feel as though they can really sell this guy to the general public as, hey, this is the guy, this is someone you can deeply care about, even with the, like, lack of personality?
So it's a great question. My answer, I think if we, like, could really get into the heart of hearts, like, you know, proper truth serum thing, the answer would be Jordan Spieth.
Yeah. Okay, Jordan Spieth, that's interesting.
Keeps moving the needle. Jordan Spieth has been with us for a full decade now, and he arrived on the scene as such a charismatic figure. I still get texts from non-golf fans, just regular sports fans, like family members, elderly folks, about Jordan Spieth. I don't get any texts about Scottie Scheffler. So Jordan Spieth, like, being back on the scene, winning the Masters, would be a huge boost for this upcoming tour season, I think, from the PGA Tour's perspective.
I think that's right, because it just, he really does still move the casuals. Like, he was supposed to be kind of the next one. And yeah, remember he had like the when the Under Armour was starting to become massive, it was like, okay, Steph Curry, and he's the guy. And then there was all the dudes who ended up being cursed. Actually, you would especially know that, the DC Connect. But yeah, it was, man, Spieth. And there is something about him where there's a charisma there, you know, like, he is someone that you kind of root for. And to me, that's interesting. Now I'm thinking about it, I still think for the PGA, they would want Rory to win. They would want him to get it. They would say, yep, he's done it. This is the best story. But yeah, I think you're right that Spieth would be number two, and then Scheffler three.
That's a fair ranking. I mean, Rory getting it hit so many narratives, and he really did carry the water for the tour. So that's a fair enough assessment. It's funny, you know, neither you nor I put Justin Thomas in the top three.
No, well, he's broken.
If there's any loser from the first two seasons of Full Swing on Netflix, I think it might be Justin Thomas. He comes off as a little bit of an entitled prick.
Oh, really? You just figured this out now? You didn't figure that out when he was at Waste Management and he basically filled his pants because there's one tournament a year where people cheer and are loud? No, he's the worst. Also, he is exhibit A as to, hey, don't hire your papa as your coach. Like, maybe go get somebody else so that you can have an opinion that isn't your dad's leading things. No, the fire in the caddy right before the Masters, and yeah, the way that this thing's going, the way that his game is, he's a complete fade for me. Like, I actually always like betting him for a top 10. I usually feel like you get a good number. This is my first year where I'm completely avoiding all JT bets.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
this is the year to bet him. You're never going to get odds this good again.
No, I'll never do it. I can't. I can't go against this now. That was my one strong opinion where I was like, this guy's broken mentally, and now you're telling me I have to bet it?
Remember what we what you were saying 5 minutes ago about being a square better?
Yeah, I know.
Sharp play, JT. There is some indication that the breakup with Bones, it was a mutual decision that it might have a liberating effect on JT. It might give him the clarity. Expectations could not be lower for him right now. And he quietly, so the problem with JT this season is he quietly has turned the corner in terms of the quality of some of his, you know, approach play. He missed the cut at Riviera, and he missed the cut at the Players. So that's what sticks in everybody's mind. The two biggest events of the season thus far, he missed the cut at both. But quietly, he's got some top 10s and top 5s, and he's striking the ball well enough to not just be dismissed out of hand. The popular narrative is the one you just shared, JD. That's the time we pounce, buddy.
Ugh, he's plus 2,900 to win. I don't think he'll win. But, yeah, maybe now.
I don't think he'll win. No, it's a nice top 10 play.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, this is fine. Fine, I'll do it. Because guess what? I have a million bets anyways.
Hold your nose.
Yeah, I was going to say, who cares? Like, it's just another drop in the bucket. Everybody seems to be all over Xander. That's the sexy pick from what I'm reading. Is like, everybody's like, oh, yeah, Schauffele, this is his time. He's in the right spot at the right time. Who is your... Like, who do you like winning this thing? What is your favorite bet for outright?
My favorite bet for outright is Hideki Matsuyama.
Okay.
And he is reminding us when he is in good health. This is the thing that's really held him back. Since he won the Masters 4 years ago, he just hasn't been able to get consistent health. What he did at Riviera to win the Genesis earlier this year, where there were six guys tied going into the 14th hole, and then he went on an incredible unmatched tear, and he won the golf tournament. It's not that dissimilar from how he won the Masters back in 21. He checked every box in terms of experience at Augusta, lots of high finishes at Augusta, his the way that he plays, you know, his the height at which he hits shots, approaches. He's in every spot, and the most compelling thing to me is you can get him in the 25 to 30 to 1 range. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to lay, you know, dumb numbers on any of these guys. That's a fair price for Hideki, and it might have changed because that's the number that I got him at before the San Antonio tournament. He played great, you know, in spurts in San Antonio. So folks are kind of on him. The number might be under 20 now.
Yeah, it is. It's plus 1900. He and Spieth share the same odds now. So yeah, people have been pounding that. I may have missed it. Guess what? I'm still going to end up riding it now. Like, I'll jump on that. I like that narrative. Again, I'll take another bet. This is my thing.
The other guy that the stats are very fond of this week, it's a little bit of a below the radar, is Shane Lowry, who had really good Florida swing and has been trending in the right direction at Augusta, has a third place finish under his belt. And, you know, all of the, again, he's a guy that checked a lot of the boxes. You know, the way that folks try and process the Masters is, here are the attributes you need to have. Here are the 8 most important things, the 10 most important things. And you take the filter and, you know, go from there. The only thing that Shane Lowry doesn't have in common with winners of the past 15 years, he's not in the top 30 of the official world golf rankings. He's 36. But otherwise, his strokes gained approach, he's third. His strokes gained tee to green, he's fifth. Strokes gained around the green is positive. His best Masters finish is third place. He has a lot of experience at the Masters. He, like I say, Shane Lowry quietly checked a lot of boxes.
Hey, guess what? I already have him at plus 400 for a top 10 finish. So we're already aligned on that one. So this is the first the first handshake that we can do. This is the first one where you just haven't bullied me into the bet. Like, you know, this is, you basically bullied me into 3 bets. I was like, fine, I'll do them all. 2 went directly against my heart, but yeah, fine. We're going to be there. Hey, okay, so before you go, I do have to ask you one basketball question. It's this. It's been a while since Raptors fans have been this in the wilderness. Like, we just played you guys. I think the Raptors won, but here's the thing I've had to check out. The one positive, I guess, of being a fan of a rudderless team is that you get to watch more basketball. Like, you get to spread your attention to the good teams, to the enjoyable teams to watch. Like, you get to watch more Jokic and you get to watch more Ants. So that's been okay. But yeah, I'm not trying to be a dick. How do we do this again? I don't remember how to be a fan of a team that just has completely no direction and looks like they're going to be, what, four or five years from being maybe competitive, like the Wizards? Like, we don't have a Jordan Poole contract, like, and we got Scottie Barnes, so it's not as bad, but it's the same. Like, you have that. So that's the number one shit. But outside of it, yeah, how do you do this? Like, how are you still going, maybe the Wizards will be good, telling people this publicly on a podcast, and, yeah, remaining optimistic? Because I'm lost with it. And most people I know that are fans of this team right now are lost as well.
I try very hard to not have anything to do with the Wizards. I try very hard. I mean, you know, I came in at the beginning of this season with the idea that, yes, this is going to be a bottom five team in the NBA. That is the path that they should be on. I'm happy to have some smart executives in the building for the first time in what feels like 25 years. And I tried to make the case at the outset of the season that the team could be a bottom five team but still win 24 games. Yeah. As soon as it became apparent that it was going to be a clown show, I was out. But yeah. JB... this is the thing. It's like a great moment. You're welcome to our world. Ugh. All you do is look at your bets. It's magnificent. Yeah. You can bet on any team in the NBA every single night of the NBA season. It's the best ever. Yeah. Get invested in a team that's on a hot streak. You know who has the best against the spread record in the NBA?
I don't.
The Orlando Magic.
Yeah, actually. Yeah,
you know who I'm a fan of?
Yeah.
The Orlando Magic. You become a team of whoever starts putting money in your pocket. It's the best thing ever.
Yeah. I mean, that is already the thing that I do. Trust me. I bet on all the sports. I just, you know, there's... I want to be able to watch the team be fine. And you know what the worst part is with this year is... this draft sucks. There's nothing. Like, to have a season that we just went through and then your reward could be Zach Edey, you go, or there was one mock draft I saw the Ringer had where I think it was Dalton Connect to the Raptors, and I went, the 24-year-old short white guy? Yeah. That's what we get for this year? No, I refuse. Someone else enter the draft. Like, I have always been staunchly against taking the dudes that you have to go watch on YouTube. They play in Australia and there's 5 seconds of them and you go, I guess I'm fully for that this year, because at least you can trick me into believing that something is there. I need a European guy or an Australian guy, whatever, because I can't have anybody from the NCAA field this year. They talked about this Cody Williams guy. I watched Buffalo. He weighs 85 pounds and he can't shoot. And I went, that's the top American? What happened? I can't have this.
No, you're absolutely right. The whole thing is we're already positioning for next year's draft, Super Flag.
Yeah.
Your point is the right one. It better be a European or Australian player, or even South American, that's not a day over 19 years old.
We better
draft a child, because there is no upside whatsoever. Speaking of children, I spent, you know, way more time and words on this proposition than I should have. But I made a pretty impassioned case to some of my Ringer cohorts that if I was in the top five of this upcoming draft, I would draft Bronny James sight unseen. I wouldn't worry about it, because I think that what the potential for that pick to turn into genuine leverage somewhere down the road that's superior to whatever the bum player turns out to be that you would set. Taking that spot otherwise, I think the leverage is going to be better. Now, you know, there's a lot of chapters to be written in terms of whether LeBron really will go wherever Bronny goes, and whether, you know, a team like Miami or Philadelphia that really could use LeBron this upcoming season will give you anything of value back for Bronny for taking that position. I'm conceding it's a little bit far-fetched.
I don't think it is.
In a draft, I mean, you know, when we're staring at like you say, Dalton Connect, give me a little upside here.
100%. Okay. So I've put this is exactly where my line of thinking was. I'm like, okay, so if you're a team that has multiple picks in this draft You're telling me that you don't want to take this shot, that this could be something? Like, you're not going to take a chance? Let's say you're, Minnesota, right? You got the 27th overall pick in this draft. You don't want to take a shot? You don't want to try to convince LeBron? Like, you're the Minnesota Timberwolves. What have you ever done? What have you ever been?
Right.
Exactly. It's like, get Bronny and see maybe if LeBron will come for a mid-level exception? That's the only chance that he has to play with his kid. And if you're one of these teams, why wouldn't you want to have that? Why wouldn't you want to hold it hostage? We know how powerful LeBron is in the league, right? Like, this is not just a normal player. He's got real, real leverage with other front offices. I 100% think teams should be considering this. The Knicks, you got two picks. You got two picks in the 20s this year. Should absolutely be doing this. If I was the Raptors even, they got pick 31. It's their third pick in the draft, in a draft they didn't even want to be a part of because they traded their first for Jakob Poeltl, and that really worked out great. Why wouldn't you do that with 31? No, I'm totally with you. I had this exact same thought, and I wondered why that's why he entered the draft, is because people are telling him, if you really want to leverage this and you can get your dad to say kind of in a back channel on record that he'll do something about this, or that he really wants to play with you, somebody's going to make this happen. I think it totally makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, there are probably 28, maybe 29 of the 32 teams that LeBron would not consider under any circumstances.
Of course.
But, what it would mean for Washington or for Toronto or for even, honestly, Minnesota, mm-hmm. could be some kind of trade asset as the season sort of develops. That's the compelling piece to me. But the Knicks is kind of incredible. That's a whole nother level of consideration. Can you imagine LeBron with this team, like the most likable team in New York? The fans, all the Knicks fans in my life are losing their minds about how much they love this team. That could be pretty cool.
That's the one to me that makes the most sense. There's two that make the most sense, but I actually don't know if Miami even has a pick in this draft. Like, they could buy one in the second, but I don't think Miami has a pick, which is, they do. They have 15. So are you going to use 15 to do that? That's rich. But if you're New York and you got 21-22, could you imagine how it's going to be on the draft floor if they go with the 22nd overall pick, the New York Knicks select Bronny James? It's going to go bananas. Like, it's ESPN's wet dream. Like, that is what they want so badly. That does everything. And so if you're LeBron, too, you want to finish your career, it's all of a sudden a competitive Knicks team where you close at the place that people thought you were going to be maybe all along when you first started in Cleveland. There's something to that.
Pretty good.
I like that. You know
Pretty
what? Good. I think we did it. As the kids say, I think we unlocked the script. You know, the NBA is scripted. It's one big script. That might be it. 22, Bronny Thank James. You. We called it. House, thanks as always for making time, man. I appreciate it.
You got it. Anytime you call, I answer, JD.
Absolutely. Thanks, brother.
Joe House. The Masters.
You too, man. You too. Joe House. Fairway Rolling and East Coast Bias Pods on the Ringer Network. Yeah, I actually was going to talk about this with you guys later, that I feel like anybody in the second round should be trying to do this for those exact reasons. Is it's not that you think you can get LeBron to come play for you, it's that you feel as though you have a more important trade piece.
Mm-hmm, totally.
That you could kick down the line.
Well, and honestly, if like this draft is as bad as everyone says, like what are you going to get in the mid-teens to 20s anyway, really, at least you have like chips that could be something.
The thing about this draft, though, is that it's the reason why people call it like really bad is because there's no like front end talent.
No, I totally get that. But I mean, if you're one of those teams, if you're one of those teams that's like pretty good anyway, and it's like, I could get this guy that maybe might get like 10th man minutes, or I could get a chip that could be, you know what I mean? Like,
it's just funny because I'm cheering for the Raptors to get like guys who's, I don't even learn their names yet, like Matas
Buzelis,
because I'm like, maybe he's good because he played for the 3-win G League Ignite.
Buzelis.
So maybe it's Lithuania. A guy. So go get him because he's not in the tournament.
Sure.
He's not Dalton Connect or Cody Williams or Stefan Castle.
Dude, even the UConn guys last night, I was like, oh my God. Like,
no.
Klingon's supposed to be in the lottery? Like, he looked awful.
No. Please, God, no. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, let's take a quick break and hit what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So here's my guess. My guess is that the men's final will not beat the women's final in terms of the number.
I agree.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
In fact, they should be lucky to get half that number. I really tried to get up for, you know, Edie and Klingon and the two bigs battle and the head-to-head. And, you and I were mentioning it during one of the breaks that it felt like it actually did feel like the Iowa-South Carolina game from the standpoint of once you were 5 minutes in the game, you were like, these guys don't have a hope in hell. Mm-hmm. Like, this is done. Any idea that this was going to be a good or close basketball game, it was just kind of thrown out the window.
They just didn't have the horses.
No.
That's the same thing.
You know, we got our guy here. We got Daniele Franceschi, the college hoops guru of the station. Actually, I think that, you know, this is there's a possibility for someday that Daniele steals being called the coach like they do with Jack Armstrong someday, because he'll just end up being called the coach and then he's the guy that does like all the college basketball stuff in this country. Okay, so I have two questions for you about this tournament now that it's wrapped up. One is, so Cooper Flagg is going to Duke next year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even some buzz that Filipowski is going to come back. So they could have like a bit of a, I don't think he will just because the draft is so weak. He has a chance to be a lottery pick. Probably be a mistake to me if he ended up doing that, but whatever. So I'm trying to outline that Duke has a chance next season to be really good, public again. Flagg apparently is going to be the most hyped guy since Zion in college basketball. But have we now entered a space where UConn is Duke to the new generation or to the younger generation of basketball fans where it's like, they have the hated coach who does, you know what everybody says about Hurley? He's doing too much. That's what you sit with casuals and that's how they feel. And they've now just fielded a team that's going to have five guys who go in the first round, which is always going to be a tough look for a team that ends up winning. Cause it feels like the deck is stacked against the rest of the field.
Mm-hmm.
Like UConn moving forward is what in the college basketball landscape? Cause I feel like they were the blue blood that was on the outside of being the blue bloods that everybody liked.
Yep.
And now I feel like they're the blue blood at the top that everybody hates.
100%. They should have the bullseye on them.
Yeah.
They are the new evil empire of college basketball.
I hate them.
I love it. It's funny. So you mentioned Dan Hurley. I love Dan Hurley.
Yeah.
I love him. I was watching the game yesterday with my brother.
Yeah.
My brother played for me his final year of high school. And he goes, man, just watch all the mannerisms and how animated he is. He's like, that's how you are. And I'm like, yeah, that is how I am. That's how much, that's literally, if you watch him, psychotic, crazy guy on the sideline, animated the whole way through. That's basically in a nutshell how I like to coach during games.
Are you pushing your own players and getting
I watched him get into a
heated argument with his brother while he was coaching me, which was enjoying.
No, I will not push. Never push players.
Yeah.
My favorite is going down the bench and you're just looking and then you're like, go get them. Just go. And they know. And they know who they're going. Yeah. Like, they'll know without you telling them. They're like, all right, oh, I'm going to get so-and-so. I'm like, yeah, you're going to get so-and-so. Because they can tell.
So you're still standing for UConn is essentially it.
I think it's great. But I also feel like, you know, people are going to buy into what's going on with Duke, for example, because Cooper Flagg's this flashy new toy coming in.
I feel like people are going to be cheering for them.
Sure, but I can assure you they're probably in all likelihood not winning a national championship.
Mm.
That's not going to happen. Like, I just don't see it. I think you need, at this rate, like, look at UConn, for example. They've won back-to-back titles now. Mm-hmm. He's going to go hit the portal again. He's going to reload and replenish.
Mm-hmm.
Team might not win another title next year. They'll still be very good because the system and the infrastructure is constructed in a way that's going to put them in a position to be very successful.
So there's no chance Hurley goes to Connecticut?
To Kentucky? Zero chance.
Okay.
Zero chance. That's not the one name for Kentucky I really think makes a lot of sense and I would like to see. I really want to see Scott Drew go to Kentucky. I think Scott Drew going from Baylor to Kentucky would be about the best fit that if you're a Kentucky fan, you could probably ask for.
I was hoping that it was going to be Hurley just because ruin the program, like screw up their program and steal their guy. And
he's next. He, to me, strikes me as being, I'm not going to say he's like, he's that long-term play, right?
Yeah,
he's the Krzyzewski. He's the
Izzo.
He's the self of this era. We're getting to here.
Simon made a face when I said that people are going to cheer for Duke, and I believe that if next year Duke and Connecticut went head-to-head in a meaningful game, that the public consensus would start to drift towards not rooting for the evil empire that is UConn.
Sounds gross.
It does. Buddy, I've built
What program would it take for you to cheer for UConn? Because I don't think there is one.
No, yeah, there isn't. There is one. I would cheer for anyone, especially. No,
if it's Duke, if it's Kentucky, I mean, Kentucky will look different.
I've always been a Kansas guy.
If it's Arkansas with Calipari, like, you're going to cheer. People are going to cheer for whoever is going up against UConn.
There's no one.
There's nobody.
The only team for me personally is Oregon, but that's because I hate Oregon the most.
Yeah.
So that's West Coast bias.
What I mean. So I would cheer for UConn against Oregon, but I would probably feel sick and I wouldn't even watch the game. Okay, the last question on tournament. So Zach Edey did something with 37 points that no one has done in a finals game other than Bill Walton and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Mm-hmm. And yet it couldn't be a smaller story in this country. So Ben and I theorized about this early, that it's just the style in which he plays, where it's like he's a huge 7'3" guy. And also that we're spoiled with Canadians. Is there something else to you? Because this has got to be, this feels strong, but it feels right. In terms of Canadians accomplishing something, it's the most muted coverage I've ever seen. Like, again, this is the best player on a number one mm-hmm. seed that just scored 37 freaking points in the men's championship game. And most Canadians either don't know, don't care, don't ever want to care.
Okay, the only thing I would add to the 2 points you referenced there,
mm-hmm.
aesthetically, it's not the most exciting brand of basketball.
Yeah.
He's not a 6'5", 6'6" guard that's jumping out of the gym, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he was that, and he had, and he does have a swagger to him. I actually admire the fact that we saw more personality from him, because up until this tournament, most people probably had never even really heard him speak, or you see that fiery side to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the aesthetics of it, the fact that it's not, it's literally, for me, I loved it. I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, baby, throw it back to the 80s. We've got the 2 7-footers banging down in the post. It's great. But no, if we are spoiled because we've seen so many great Canadian players, but it's just the fact that this guy hasn't had a storied, meteoric, steady ascent from when he was in high school all the way up.
Mm.
It's just like, oh, he's good. And he kind of burst onto the scene, and now everybody, if you're a big fan of college sports or you're a big fan of basketball in general, you're going to be familiar with him. But
he's
totally
not going to be anybody's favorite player.
It felt so muted, man.
Yeah.
It really did. And it's unfortunate, but quite frankly, him having 37 actually played into the hands of UConn, and it was the exact recipe that the Huskies wanted, because Purdue was limited to shooting the ball from the perimeter only 7 times. 7 3-point attempts in that game for a team that led the country in 3-point shooting percentage.
That's what I mean.
That's where the game is decided.
But that's it, too. And Simon, you made this point, how it was like, that diminishes that 37 points to me, is that it really felt like, okay, cool, you're just getting yours, but your team isn't going to win this game. And that second half, it sucked. That's all I got there for. I got there for the second half, watched the entire, perfect timing. Jays ended and it was boom. It was tipped in the second half. And I went, okay, let's see what they got. And then it was just Edey. And it was just okay. So, yeah, same thing over and over and over again. Formula. Anyway, I think it's good for Canada basketball. I don't mind. Like I have to say it, like I don't hate Zach Edey. I don't mind him. I think he's all right. But yes, I don't think that when he comes to play the Raptors, for example, there's going to be many people who are like, man, we got to get down there and go see Zach Edey play. And so, I think footers are returning to the game. The game's going to need more of them, especially since, we got Wembanyama, who is going to be basically someone that teams are going to have to game plan for moving forward. Like, much like when there was Shaq and some teams were like, we need this. By the way, that was a good reminder of how big Shaq is, was when he hugged Edey and he's like way bigger than Edey. And you were like, yeah, man, like imagine that, dude. Anyways, all right, let's hit the rest of what we missed. Thanks, Danielle. I appreciate that, man.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, so what else we miss?
Let's start off with, we touched on the Leafs win last night a little bit and how much joy we got out of Dubas and Spets there. But Matthew, 65 goals.
It's outrageous. So now he's tied Ovechkin's number, which I think means a lot to him. He's clearly going to go over that number because it would take a fluke of all flukes for him not to. I think we are now officially in deeply caring about 70 Chase, but that, him getting 66 and being able to say I had more goals in a single season than Alex Ovechkin, that is a huge chip to have if these guys even get remotely close in goal scoring, because you don't know how your careers pan out. Like, you don't know how Matthew's going to age or how long he'll play or injuries or anything like along those lines. But if he gets it, we do this with Ovechkin, right? We do the era adjusted, and some people say he has to pass Gretzky to be the greatest goal scorer. Some people, he already is because the era adjustments, whatever. I think if Matthews can even kind of get in the ballpark of Ovechkin, that this is something that people might end up pointing to. They go, well, in his prime, he scored more goals in a singular season than Ovechkin. It means a lot. I think you can tell how much it means to this team. And yeah, it was just so funny that he ends up scoring it like back foot rip on the power play. Like, how many guys even get that one? I'm sure Nedeljkovic wanted to have it back, but no, big win for the Leafs. I think it's an important win for the psyche of the fans. I'm telling you, like, I didn't do Leafs talk last night. I'm looking forward to watching it later today. We've got another episode tonight, but yeah, I actually am going to go back and watch the game today to see how they played. But yeah, Matthews hitting 65 is a huge marker. All right, what's next?
Almost got your dream Domi.
I know. I was getting a lot of tweets about it. I saw the bunting dive, by the way, too, and I was like, oh god, that's so frustrating on the other side of it. But yes, I did see that. So good for Domi for. Hey, Max, thanks for listening. Love you, buddy. What's next?
There's a big Ottawa contingent on this show, so let's do some Ottawa talk. Couple things. First off, I think over the weekend, you saw the Sens lose their mind, especially Brady Tkachuk after an ego shot tucked in that.
I'm glad you brought this up. I didn't touch on it, but okay, here's the thing. I know Leaf fans were like, they're hypocrites. It's like, yeah, duh. But this is it's like the Riley Grigg thing. This was the easiest thing for me to understand and for anyone to understand. What he did was obvious antagonist behavior. Mm-hmm. Like, is there the code and all this stuff? Like, everybody ruins, I don't want to say ruin it, but everyone gets so weird with this stuff where they're like, what he did, there's nothing wrong with it. It's like, yeah, you're allowed to do that, but you can't act surprised when someone comes and punches you in the head. And this is actually the thing that I think the NHL got wrong with the Morgan Riley suspension, where they were like, it's an unprovoked act or it doesn't happen in the game or whatever. It's like, no, man, that is when you're doing something like that, you should have braced for impact that somebody is coming for you and whatever. We don't need to relitigate that suspension. But of course, when a team does something cheeky, then you have to respond because otherwise you look soft. That is the sport. And so good for the Sens for doing it. And I think they would have actually looked dumber had they been like, no, we're already over this. Like, we actually endorse that kind of behavior. No, you want to have it that way. You protect the goal. You don't want teams doing that to you late in the game. I don't mind the Senators for doing it. I do think it's funny that it happened in the same season. I get why it's an easy one to go after. But, like, again, I don't think that any Ottawa Senators player saw what Riley Grigg did and said, oh, that was so cool and... Or not even that it was cool, but it was like, yeah, he shouldn't. Why did they even react that way? Even Greg himself said that he kind of regretted it. And it, I don't even think it was regrettable. I loved it. I think it's awesome to do stuff like that. But let's not pretend it's not with the purpose of pissing people off. Like, duh, it was ratty behavior. What's the second thing?
Second thing is Ottawa City Council declared Ottawa, so they kind of declare themselves, the shawarma capital of Canada. Yeah. Now, we spent time in Ottawa. Toronto folks seem to like kind of disagree online, obviously, standing up for the city as the shawarma capital.
Yeah.
For you, better shawarma, Ottawa, Toronto, settle this.
Unquestionably Ottawa.
Correct.
Listen, Toronto has, this is the thing. Toronto should never be insecure about the other places because we have everything.
We got so much.
We have everything. Let Ottawa have this.
Ottawa has shawarma.
And here's the main reason why there's no question in terms of why Ottawa dominates Toronto in it is because I went to university there. That's when I was in peak shawarma eating times.
100%.
That's when
late night Maru shawarma after the bars.
Correct.
Yes.
I can never replicate the times I had in Ottawa.
Correct.
Getting shawarma to now.
Waking up with that shawarma hangover where it's like your breath's
horrible.
Beer and garlic.
Horrible. Yeah. But the excitement, like that is... If I was to say, what is the Ottawa experience for a younger person, like a drinking age person, it's you go to the bar and then at the end of the night, you're going out to get shawarmas.
Correct.
So you are the shawarma capital because that is the number one go-to. Here you have the World's
Options.
Your Oyster.
Yeah.
The World's Your Oyster here.
There it's one thing.
It's one singular thing that you go and get, and that is shawarma.
Yeah.
So yes, they should be the shawarma capital of the world. And anybody that's pushing back against that, like, you don't need to. We have a million things. We can be we can be lots of other things. Anyway, we got to go. By the way, the Wemby logo, I'm just saying it. I loved it. It's incredible.
Like,
go Google it. I went, and the second I saw it, I thought it was going to be overhyped because people were freaking out. And then I saw it.
That's really cool.
Damn, I actually want that merch. Like, I would wear that. Anyways, we got to run. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave 5 stars. We'll see you tomorrow.